And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd still go. And so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
So I don't know about the two of you, lads, but that did not feel like a Munster Championship hurling match yesterday, lads. It was bizarre. Like, it was so weird. It was in Thurles. It was two Munster teams. It was the Munster Championship. But I don't know, lads. JJ, I'll start with you. It felt like, you know, it felt like a challenge match in training. I'm sure you had a lot of A versus Bs in Nolan Park that could, maybe it was the same thing. It was even a weird one. The ball was thrown in as a national anthem was going on. Usually you associate the magic of the Munster Championship with the roar of the crowd, you know, the atmosphere, the colour, all those things, you know, the kind of gladiatorial hits and the scores being cheered and fanatic support. You know, none of that was there though yesterday. Now, I'm not giving out. I'm delighted to have the game back, but that was...
You're sure, are you?
but that was like, I don't know. It was a strange match, is the way I would say.
Yeah, it's a strange match. And you look at the two games of the weekend as well. Very, very high scoring as well. And that's probably one big question that we have over the weekend. Is that what we have to look forward to now for the whole championship ahead? It's all a lot of free scoring, a lot of kind of a loose ball play, no kind of man-to-man kind of tackles, no big hits, is what you were saying earlier on. That's what you associate with, definitely with the Munster Championship as well. I'm kind of reserve judgment until next weekend. I think this is when the proper championship is going to properly kick off. You have the Leinster semi-finals and the Munster semi-finals next weekend. So that was going to be huge itself. Looking back in the last two games on the weekend, it was kind of you score, I score, you score, I score. You know, it's kind of a glorified kind of a challenge match feel to it there as well. But then again, it's the first thing the players are used to getting the game in a big stadium as well. So that will kind of stand to the teams that played this weekend. That will stand to them next weekend when going ahead. So, I see what you're saying, but I'm going to reserve judgment until the games next weekend, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, you were in Croke Park, so you were there on Saturday night. Michael, you were watching on TV the same as me, and at least Sky had some... Now, Sky's sound effects are a little bit all over the place, their atmosphere. But I'm not going to lie, I'm a big fan of the atmosphere, the fake crowd noise. It gives you some sense of atmosphere overriding those hollow sounds of players shouting at each other.
Yeah, I agree, Willie. Like, just if there's a little hit and you hear a few cheers, it definitely adds to the game watching it on telly anyway. But look, John Kiely hit on it before the match yesterday. He said, like, driving in there to Thurles and having no crowd, having the bus go through, no crowd, and the players going through, he said it was surreal. But he also said the players were that bit calmer. So
right,
it would be easier for them in this championship going to matches and having, it's a little bit less pressure off them, I think, arriving and there's not thousands of people there. So.
Oh yeah. Well, Jesus, if there's not a full stand shouting that you're useless, I'd say that's an awful lot less pressure to have on your shoulder. Well, in funny way, JJ, we saw no players celebrating winning a free because there's no ones to celebrate to.
Yeah, that's one good thing that might come out already. The fist pumping is gone. But just going back in your point there, it's just weird that on Saturday night the two teams ran out and it was nothing. It was just, you're kind of, if you weren't looking at on the field and you wondered what was going on, it was just so weird. A surreal feeling. I'd say it was a surreal feeling for the players as well. But as I said, the players are after going through that. The players that did play the last weekend are after going through it. So they might be a bit more used to next weekend again, you know.
Yeah. Come here, have Sky changed their panel? Is Rachel Wise and Brian Carty gone for some new fresh talent?
No, Rachel's on maternity leave at the moment. And I'm sure Brian Carty can't come over because of the COVID regulations at the moment too. Like, you know what I mean?
Oh,
so, yeah, look, they're still a part of it. But obviously, he can't come over because they have to quarantine for a couple of weeks before he comes over. And obviously, his day job now would be the rugby league over in the UK as well. So they couldn't travel, you know.
All right. So Brian Carney, not to be confused with Brian Carty, like I said. So, like, I mean, but yeah. In fairness to James E. O'Connor, he did some job anchoring that analysis on his own, Michael. That's not easy to do without someone throwing questions at you. He had to wrap up one bit of analysis and move on to another one.
Yeah, he was very good, Willie. Look, he's very thorough, I think. I like watching James. I think he's very good and he hit points. But again, as I said, when there's no one bouncing questions off you, it definitely makes it tougher. But look, he was seamless enough on Sky and I enjoyed watching. I thought the coverage was very good the weekend.
Yeah, JJ especially, says you, Michael.
I'm going right here, lads.
JJ, just to pull you up on that point about the high-scoring games, because Matty Kenny was talking after the match, and he says, I know this has been referenced with the Premier League in England. Now, I'd never heard that. He says, playing in an empty Croke Park, the emotion of the crowd isn't there. The game seemed very open, I thought. There were lots of scores from both sides. Laois ran up a very good score as well. Not good enough, anyways. But Dublin scored 231. Limerick scored 36 points. Like, that's phenomenal scoring.
Yeah, phenomenal scoring on both sides as well. They were seen to be very, very loose. As I said, it was all kind of 15, 20-yard passes in both games, to be honest with you. You know, and look, Dublin and Laois, they both played sweepers as well, but Dublin just played their sweeper very, very well. The first 10 minutes, they were hitting Amos Bob. After that, they kind of got it rectified. But, and Limerick played their kind of triangles, as what to say. Like, they've always options. Limerick always have options when they're on the ball. But, yeah, see, Laois scored 23 points, and Clare scored 123. In a championship game, before this year, you're probably aiming mid-20s, late 20s, and you could win any championship game. So like your bet, and the two teams were bet well, but they're still scoring 123 and 23 points. So that's where I'd say the conversations come around the high-scoring games.
Yeah, it's just Michael, it's just very hard to replicate the intensity of a summer's day with a huge crowd, and you're trying to replicate that level of intensity and that level of tackling maybe, you know, without any of that.
Yeah, so you see a big hit going in, Willie, and as you said, there's no fist pumping because there's no crowd to cheer up, and they sort of a hit happens and play goes on, so there's not real recognition for a big hit. So like it's still going on, definitely, but I don't think it's highlighted too much during the games when you're watching them on telly anyway. So, and I don't think the players feel it too much either, because the game just continues.
Yeah.
Crowd loved it, but there's no crowd there. You just got to get up and get on with it.
Yeah, I think Garrod Hegarty kind of half celebrated one challenge yesterday, but that was about it. Although Chris Crummie was doing a little bit of it on Saturday night. Now he was getting in.
And especially if he gets up for a score. So look, I thought he had a very good game, Chris, centre forward. And
yeah,
we're seeing that now. I think with the athletic tall lad, you've seen Clare trying it with Davy Fitz, and I think it worked more for Dublin. Like Lucan have played Chris there in the championship for themselves a number of times, and he's a very effective up there because he's very comfortable in front of goal. So I think he'll add something there, but I'm afraid of what you're losing in the half back line, to be honest with you, going forward. So
it's right. Yeah, you might be robbing Peter to pay Paul. Danny Sutcliffe was up for a two, JJ, on Saturday night. He was throwing himself around, and then obviously he had that terrible foot trip with the hurley, something you don't see that very often now. And like, I mean, it was desperately cynical because it was on Paddy Purcell, and if it was a different player, he might not have bothered doing it. Like, he wasn't letting Paddy Purcell get ahead of steam. I don't know. Like, I mean, you're allergic to the black card. Should that be a red card?
I don't think so. It'd be a very, very harsh red card. Look, it was a free. Maybe if they brought in the rule to say that it should be maybe a 21-yard or a penalty or something like that for a cynical foul. But so for something like that to give you a straight red card, and Danny, you end up missing the semi-final there next week as well because of something like that. But then if players knew that, sure, why wouldn't you just take him out completely altogether rather than just tap his ankles? You know, the kind of way, you know, it'll bring in a different rule for that there as well. So, no, I wouldn't like to see that coming into the game. Look, even the foot trip or the black card, to be honest with you, or red card for something like that. But going back to Danny, look, he covered a huge amount of ground. I'd say he wasn't happy with his own performance in Moore Park last year as well. He took a long time to get on the ball last year, but he was there looking for the ball. So when the ball was thrown in there Saturday night, he wanted to get his hand on the ball and kind of feel his way into the game, which he did. But he'd done a lot of work. But the Dublin team are very, very athletic, and they covered a huge amount of ground compared to them. And they didn't really have set positions. They kind of had to go where the thought was right for the team. That's what they were doing, you know what I mean? So Matty and the lads on the line weren't actually telling Danny to go back into position. They were just kind of, wherever the danger is, you go and get that sorted, you know?
Right, okay. We'll talk about we'll analyse that in part two, because I was disappointed with Laois's performance. I know they were down players, but they didn't look like have anything like the running game that we saw last year for them. Donal Burke finally was honest at the end of this game, Michael. I have a bit of a bee in my bonnet about players saying that revenge isn't on our mind, right? So, yeah Danny Sutcliffe denying it. You had Matty Kenny denying it. And Donal Burke, who came out after the game, he says, we came out with, he was asked about the Laois results last year. He says, yeah, we came out with that in the back of our minds. We wanted a bit of revenge for last year. We didn't do ourselves justice, but from tomorrow, we'll get our heads right for next week. He's gone away from the party line that revenge is not a big deal, because we all know revenge is a huge motivating factor.
Absolutely, Willie. That was on all their minds. I've spoken to a few lads over the last week, and that was definitely on their minds. But look, you can say it after the game. It's perfectly fine.
What's wrong with saying it before the game? Why are people allergic to admitting, yeah, we'd like a bit of revenge?
I don't know. They're afraid to, I suppose, give anything away, you know. And the Laois lads knew it was coming anyway. Knew they would be out for revenge. So it's no secret. But most players, they just don't want to give the media any talking points, I suppose. So just say nothing, you know. But it's perfectly. I liked hearing it after the game as well. I thought he spoke very well. And look, he's a serious talent. He's been great for Nathine, and when he's on song, he's unstoppable. So, he had some match yesterday.
Yeah, he definitely did. What about you, JJ? You missed 07. Revenge against Cork was a huge one. You were there 2011 when revenge on Tipperary was a big one. Surely you're talking about getting revenge for last year.
Oh, you have to, 100%. There's that in you at all. As a group, and more, I suppose, more for the players themselves as individuals. A lot of players didn't hold well against Laois last year, and down in the Moor Park as well. And look, again, if there's that in yourself as well, you want to kind of rectify that result as much as possible. It's bad enough you playing bad and your team winning, but when you play bad and your team loses, it's very, very hard to take. So, and we're lucky. I'd say Matty Kenny was rubbing his hands when he seen the draw there for Laois and Dublin. He didn't really have to do a huge amount of talking and dressing before. All he'd do is show him the match from last year and show him the celebrations, the Laois guys coming onto the field and everything like that as well. And that was the story of last year. But the problem is, with the story last year, everyone thinks about Laois, but no one thinks about Dublin being on the receiving end of that result as well. So I'd say that would have to be fresh in your mind as well. And look, players need a bit of motivation, and it takes something very, very small. They shouldn't have bet last year. I want to beat them this year. You know what I mean? It'll get you a bit more kind of pumped up for the match there as well. So, look, Dublin obviously earmarked the first 10, 15 minutes for it, and they came out of blocks very, very quickly, to be fair.
Yeah, no, and it is usually the team looking for revenge that do that. So, it's definitely a motivating factor. Anyway, I'm going to stop talking about the revenge thing. Come here, Mike. The referee was very hard on Ivor Quilligan, the Clare goalkeeper. He threw in the ball for him coming outside the square. Now, as Donald O'Cusick said, the umpire called it, so he obviously had warned him. Now, is Ivor Quilligan telling the umpire, go away now, in his own mind, maybe not to the umpire, go away now and don't be annoying me with this pettiness, and I'm going to step outside it again, and then he got punished? Do you know what I mean? Because there was a bit of a conversation that I didn't know what was going on before that.
Yeah, you could see that, and I was laughing because he got pulled on it, and the very next puck out, he stood outside the box for it.
Yeah.
Because, oh, we pulled you once, you can do what you want now. You know, that seemed to be the scenario, and you'll often see it with goalkeepers, that umpires get in their head to keep them in. That's their little bit of control. And after they're pulled once, they can do what they want. And I've seen that loads of times in games, you know, and I was laughing on TV. You could obviously see him step outside the box for the very next puck out, and nothing happened. So, look, he showed us a bit of power and pulled them once. And I don't like to see it. Look, what difference does a foot make in an 80 yards? Leave him off. He's only stepping one foot out. But look, you see goalkeepers getting pulled, but it's only ever once. I've never seen a goalie being pulled twice in a game. So once they show that bit of power, they let them do what they want for the rest of the game. So it doesn't make too much sense to me, to be honest.
All right. Is that how it works, JJ? Laying down the law? Because the referee pulled him up. The referee wouldn't allow him go with the really quick ones as well, which he likes to do.
Yeah, I suppose, look, the keeper wants to go in, probably a tactic from Clare as well. They want to get the ball out as quickly as possible. So the Limerick guys can't go back into their half-back and set up. And obviously, the quicker you hit out the ball, then the more options you'll have, especially if the Clare lads are moving up front there as well. So, yeah, look, I think it's a rule that I agree 100% with Michael. A foot outside the box, what difference does it make? If the game is up and running, and I just let it happen, really, more than that. You know, fair enough, you blow the referee, you blow the whistle once for a quick puck out. But then after that, it's up to the referee. And this, I kind of said this kind of last year as well, I think they're just taking down the score and then they're turning around and blowing a whistle. Take the scoring away from the referee. I don't think they need to do that anymore. Have the fourth official taking the score down. So when a point goes over, the referee can turn, look at the goalkeeper. He's ready to go. Puck it out. Game is on as quickly as possible there as well. Rather than taking down the score, running back to midfield there as well, turn around and then blowing a whistle. Because the ball travels so quickly, the referee has to be in the middle of the field to see anything happening up in the half forward and half back lane there as well. So I think they should take the score taken away from the referee, have the fourth official do it, and then you can have a quicker kind of turnaround for the puck out there as well.
Right. We kind of had that in Gaelic football as well, and it used to frustrate me at times. So, for example, a ball could be going over the bar and Cluxton could be reaching for another ball. The ball has... The point has hardly been chalked down and the play has been resumed again. The TV cameras never pick it up because they're following the ball going over the bar. I find it a little bit messy, Mick. I don't know about you. Especially in hurling, the ball could be pointed from the 65. It's floating over the bar. The whole time that's floating over the bar, you have the clear goalkeeper already with a slitter in his hand. At what point is he allowed to poke that out? Do you know what I mean? Just as it's literally floating over the bar.
Yeah, he's waiting. As AJ said, it's a good point. He's waiting for the ref to set up and take the score, write it down, and then blow the whistle for a puck out. Like, everyone wants to see the game speed up. But
can it speed up too much to the point where the TV cameras can't even keep up with it? Do you get my point?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but look, 10 seconds, I suppose. Like, once the ball goes over the bar and the ref blows his whistle, the game can't continue, obviously, until he blows his whistle. So, like, if he sets up within that 5-10 seconds, that's fine. I definitely agree with JJ. Like, why is he taking the score down? And what's the point there? Because there's loads of officials around the pitch to do that. And it's less hassle for him. So, look, you don't want the TV missing puck outs all the time. But, like, 5-10 seconds and that's it. And you just take that responsibility away from the ref. I think that's a good point from JJ.
Yeah, no,
so,
I agree.
Just an example, Willie, there as well. The Tipperary County final this year, Lochmore, and I think Langan in the final there as well. So, Lochmore had a free to win it.
Yeah.
The keeper had the ball in his hand before the ball went over the bar.
Yeah.
And he poked it out straight away and they went down, that their thing went down and scored a goal straight away. Now, probably the referee could have pulled it, but that's sort of the quick thinking for the goalkeeper to be ready to go. Now, again, Lochmore couldn't actually set up their defensive because the referee allowed the quick puck out. They went down. They were brave. The keeper was very brave to have the ball in his hand ready to go. And look, because the referee let it go, they went down and scored a goal, won the county final. So that kind of rewards a bit of bravery from the keeper as well, to be fair. Something like that.
Yeah, that's a great example, JJ. Like, I mean, we talked about that on the show the day after. Like, and the goalkeeper had been at fault for that 65, so he really redeemed himself. But like, is there an inconsistency here then, JJ, that one week one referee's pulling a player back and then another referee's allowing this kind of happen so fast, even before maybe the umpire is even shaking the white flag?
That is, but look at me, there's inconsistency up and down the country every game. You know that kind of way, because look, the games we play are not black and white, and we can't kind of, it's all up to interpretation from the referees themselves. Yeah. So, yeah, there is inconsistency there, but there's inconsistency there in everything as well, like, you know. But I think it's something simple that could be took and give a bit more freedom to the referee to look around and actually pull the blatant fouls rather than just taking down a score. But I think that's kind of, I think it's a thing of the past. We have technology now, why not use it?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Definitely, we're all in agreement on the referee not having to look down in his book and scribble down a number after it goes over. Geez, Keane Lynch took one in the side of the ear yesterday, lads. And I don't know, like, I mean, I've never been hit by it. I have been hit by a slitter in a GAA jackass, all right, but never. But I'm just thinking, like, because a lot of the helmets leave the strap of the helmet comes down around the ear and leaves the ear completely exposed. Mick, I'll start with you. Have you ever received a slitter on a cold day, well, in any day, flush into the ear?
Absolutely, because that gap there in the helmet, and my ears stuck out anyway, so they were definitely there to be hit. But it's a killer, really, you know. Like,
oh my god,
it stings for a few, but look, you get over it. But they're definitely not nice to receive. It's not nice to get a hit anywhere with a slitter, but the ear in particular, it's definitely not a nice one, and you'll feel it the next day as well. So I felt for Keane yesterday, and it wasn't that.
Jeez, I think anyone that's got a little punch in the ear or anything would feel for Keane yesterday. Can in any way relate to it? Have you got them, JJ? Like, I have to say, on a cold day, you'd be entitled to put your hand up and say, here, look, take me off. I've enough of this today.
Especially you're winning by 10 or 12 points there at the end, just take me off. That's the thing to do actually happen, you know. But I've got a couple now through the ears as well. But you can't get out of the way. You don't even see it coming. You just get hit and you hit the ground. As simple as that. You have no choice or anything. You just have to take it, get up and kind of drive on after it right now. But yeah, I felt for Keane there yesterday, to be honest.
And okay, and moving on from that, can we give up complaining about these yellow slitters now? They look cool. I don't know about you lads, but I could see them perfectly. They seem to travel the exact same distance as the other ones. There was no question about that. I saw Michael Dyglin saying, is it only me or is it way harder to see the yellow slitter when it's going through the air? I found the opposite myself with that. Michael, you were watching. I'll get both of your opinions because you were watching on TV, Michael, and you were watching at the match, JJ.
Yeah, I had no problem seeing it, Willie. I thought it was perfectly easy to see it going through the air all throughout the game. I've seen loads of people giving out about it. In particular, I've seen the players saying the slitter is harder, which I don't really understand because it has to be made of the same stuff. It's just yellow. But
yeah.
I haven't got my hands on one of them, so I don't know if it's harder to hit. But like watching lads strike the ball yesterday, they were striking the ball some distance and no one seemed to have any issues with the striking. So, and from a visual aspect, you could see it perfectly. So, look, there was nothing wrong with the white slitter for me, but now that the yellow one's there, I'd have no problem with that either, because watching it on telly anyway, there was no hassle whatsoever. So JJ might have got a one in Coke yesterday.
Well, I was going to say that, JJ. I presume curiosity got the better of you and you snuck down to where they were poking around and got one in your hand.
I had a chat with the Dublin kit man actually and asked him what the situation with the players, how did they go on with the new yellow walls. He said after the first night there was no issue whatsoever, so I was going to ask him what the makes and where, and he says they have the O'Neills and they have the Cummins All-Stars there as well. So the only difference is the leather, the colour of the leather, what's the core of the ball is the exact same.
Right.
There's no issues whatsoever. No, I seen it perfectly there Saturday night and watching the game there yesterday, no issues whatsoever. But looking at the end of the roll and poking out the ball now, there was no issues with the yellow hurling ball. He was launching him 100, 120 yards every poke he got. He actually took one, he gave one to the fullback, came back, he was at the 21, he nearly scored a point in the first half. It was phenomenal. The distance he gets on poking the ball is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, no, he definitely did. One thing I did notice in the Munster final yesterday is it's like the club championship. During the winter, when the sun is on the pitch, the sun is coming in very low. And it's difficult to see what's going on because it almost like blinds the camera because the sun is so low in the air. But maybe that's just another point. I won't harp too much on it. Come here, lads. Another interesting one was the Joe McDonagh Cup result between Antrim and Westmead. Antrim hammered them, 19 points. And this is a Westmead team that played in Division 1A this year and who beat Carlow well in a relegation playoff. Davy Glennon's transfer hasn't gone through, but you imagine they're really going places. Antrim obviously did really well in the second division of the league. A really strange one here was Brendan Murta came out of retirement for the game. He scored 6 frees. He's 37 years of age. Now, he was played really well for his club, and in an unusual year that this year is, the club came before the county championship instead of the other way around. So somebody that might never have played county, impressed for his club, felt in good shape just before the county season and was asked to come on.
Yeah, it's a strange one. Look, if you're playing well in club championship, I've no problem with it. Like, I don't think it looks too good on Westmead hurling if you're dragging a 37-year-old out of championship to perform and play for you. Like, I just don't think it stands well to you. It showed yesterday, I was on, thank God for Antrim Twitter, because I was following the game on their Twitter feed, and look, they weren't happy at all with the coverage that they received from anyone from the Sunday game or RTE. They had a good win last week and won the league over Kerry, and they performed really well yesterday. Like, they got some return from their full forward line. The Kieran Clark got 2 goals, Conor McCann got 1, and they were very good goals, and they got a rake out of points in the full forward line. And look, that scoreline definitely doesn't look well on Westmead, and I think Shane O'Brien would be very disappointed, because if you're bringing back a 37-year-old and he has to do a job for you, I don't think it definitely stands well for your team in championship. So Westmead have a lot of work to do for next week.
Well, they definitely do, and that was out. Neil McManus wasn't playing for Antrim, which is an incredible one. But it's like this, JJ, right? So say you're an old man like yourself, still hurling away, avoiding relegation, like you are. usually if you're pushing on in years, you've retired from the county scene, you have a good club season, you finish in September, October, and then you relax for the whole winter. And the idea that you would go back slogging with the county is just madness. Whereas this year, you just finish your club season, you've gotten yourself into pretty good shape. The county's going on in 2 weeks' time. It's only going to go on for 3 or 4 weeks. Asher, Jesus, why would I be stupid not to commit to it?
Yeah, look, the year that's in it now, so it's probably a strange year and a strange situation have happened right now. And I'm still waiting for my phone call at Brian Cody. I didn't ring yet, Brian. Still a week to go, that kind of way. So I'm still holding out hope. But it's that's the big thing about the club. Even take the club situation there. A lot of older players came back playing hurling this year and Gaelic football this year because of the shorter season too, that kind of way. So you could very easily justify it and try to rationalise it in your own head that this is a good idea to go back because it's only an 8 or 10 week championship there as well. Like, yeah, but I agree with Michael there. Just the rest of the lads on the panel that didn't get on, and you're looking at Brendan Worth coming back, 37 years of age, and he's trained for the last while, and coming back on and getting the game as well. You know what I mean? It might not sit well with a couple of guys too, you know.
Yeah, and playing the whole game as well, because he's a selector. So, like, I mean, there was no chance he was going to be taken off as well. So fair play to Antrim. That's two huge results in a row. Like, I mean, so, Joe McDonagh Cup, as we know, is a great competition. So fair play to them. Right, lads, we'll leave it there and we'll come back in part two and we'll have a look at the two games in the Liam McCarthy.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up now, because there's no such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
You do.
No, we don't.
But you didn't let Shamey talk at a Hurley launch one day.
Yeah, but hold on a second now. He was at a Hurley launch, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a media ban if he can't talk at that.
Absolutely not. I think you guys need to do your job. Don't depend on us guys for quotes, you know.
Okay.
Earn your living like the rest of us.
But if he's at a media day and he says to the media that I'm not allowed to talk, then he's obviously on a ban.
Well, I think he's carrying a mixed message.
All right, lads, so we'll start with the big one in Munster. It was Limerick, 36 points. Yes, you've heard that right, 36 points clear, 123. And this is the age-old issue you have when you're playing Limerick. They have a very good full forward line. They like to hit them with lovely diagonal balls. What do? We keep our half-back line in position and let their half-forward line drop back and give our full back line some cover? That's what Clare chose to do yesterday. Have a look at this. Garrod Hegarty, 5 from play. Tom Morrissey, 4 from play. Kyle Hayes, 3 from play, and should have had 5 or 6. Like, I mean, the idea that you would drop your half back line off, JJ, and not cover these three fellas, like, I mean, just tactically, it's crazy.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you can't give these guys so much room. But the problem is the three lads go looking for the ball as well. And with the Limerick, the way Limerick play, the person on the ball always has two options. He can hit the ball himself, or he has a 10-yard pass, and he the third runner coming on the diagonal as well for him to have a pass. So they're always thinking two steps ahead, really, more than anything. That's what John Kiley has instilled in him. But it's going to be, Kilkenny done it last year, and I think Clare were working off the Kilkenny model, but they didn't bring anywhere near the intensity that Kilkenny brought there in the Ireland semi-final there last year. So, yeah, you can do it, you can drop off, but you'll need your midfielders to filter back. You need your half-forwards to filter back and fill them gaps as much as possible, because all well and good if you're staying back, but the ball is not going in. But if you get over integrity, Clayton planted his feet there a couple of times and had a shot at the goal, that's lunacy at this kind of a level as well. On the run, you're trying, right, will try and put them under pressure, but if the wing forward, centre forward, has time to plant his feet and hit the ball, they're going to score all day, you know, that kind of way. So it's you can be caught in between covering your full forward line and or full back line and actually letting your man go out the field too, like, so. And that's where the Clare guys were caught.
Yeah,
I don't think you can do one set rule. You kind of have to mix it up and do both. You can actually have to stand in your position at times, but then there is times that you have to go out and go up on your man, because if you don't go up on your man, he knows when he goes out the field he's going to have time to turn around and actually pick that pass, and he'll float it over your head. So you have to kind of mix it up and do both and keep your the man you're marking, the wing forward or centre forward, guessing that will he behind me or not, you know, that kind of way. So you're going to have to mix it up.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, when you look at you mentioned the contrast to Kilkenny, like, Kilkenny's half forward line picked those up, and then of course you're worried making your half forward line drop off Burns and Hannon and these lads, but Kilkenny's full forward line came out on them. Kilkenny just squeezed that middle so much that Limerick had no real space to be playing those little balls into, and so they got the benefit of covering the full forward line. Their half-forward line covered the likes of Hayes and Garrod Hegarty, and then the full-forward line came out. So, like, you didn't really see that from Clare, I didn't think, Michael. Like, I mean, you didn't see Ryan Reedy or Fitzgerald really doing that dog work of picking those half-forward line up when they dropped deep at all yesterday.
Yeah, like, you can't leave that Limerick half-forward line loose. That's 12 points in play. That would kill any team.
Yeah.
And too good. Limerick are too good, like, other teams, you might say, look, you can drop off them a bit because the half-back line won't pick them out as much. But Limerick constantly look for that half-forward line. And Limerick's half-back line and midfield are so clever on the ball that if they see the half-back line pushing up and marking them, they go over them.
Yeah.
They're very, very good at doing it. again, to Kilkenny last year, the intensity that Kilkenny's forward line bring when they're playing is unreal, and I don't think any other team match it really. So there's their intensity of tackling, and Clare didn't match that yesterday. Clare's forwards didn't match. They started the match well, putting it up to them, but it faded quite quickly, and the Limerick backline were coming out with balls, and once they can get their head up and look up, there's very little a half backline on the opposing team can do, because they're going to be cutting no man's land. If they're marking their forward, it's going to go over their head, and there's going to be goal chances. So I think you really rely on your forward line against Limerick to put a huge amount of pressure on them, and they all have to drop back the line, and unfortunately not many teams can keep it up for the full game.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, I suppose, JJ. Everybody has to drop a line, not just your half forward line. Your full forward line has to help out. It's a collective thing to try and stop Limerick, because it's not easy to stop them. Because usually in hurling, I've talked to Damien Hayes about this. You know, you drop short and it's not given to you and it's driven over your head. And now it's down between the half back that didn't follow you. And, you know, he's back there covering. Limerick never have that issue. They have a very, very obvious system that these lads that drop short, 9 times out of 10 are getting it if they're not picked up.
Yeah, they're looking for the ball as well, and that's probably the system they've been playing for the last few years. And look, they're perfected on year on year, and they're actually getting better at it as well, to be fair. But they have phenomenal hurlers. Declan Hannan, centre back, he's like a quarterback when he gets the ball in his hand. He picks the right pass all the time there as well. And yeah, the likes of Keane Inch there as well. And Keane Inch could score more himself, but he plays the ball around a lot more to his forwards' benefits, because any other midfielder might be a bit more selfish and take a few more scores himself. But they just have options, as I said. Like, they just, when the guy in the ball hits it 10 yards, but then there's a third guy running for in that kind of a triangle kind of space, and that breaks the tackle. And anyone that goes to the guy receiving the ball, a quick layoff, and then after breaking the lines there again, so hard to actually counteract. But again, as I said, the intensity that Kilkenny brought, but the second half that was kind of fading away, and I suppose you go back realistically looking at it again, if that match went on for another 5 minutes, you probably would have favoured Limerick to go ahead and win that then again. You know the kind of way, so it's very, very hard to keep that intensity up while keeping the scoreboard taking over as well. You know the kind of way, so it's very, very hard, but this is what teams have to do against Limerick as well. And next weekend is going to be absolutely huge for Tipperary to break down the half back line, the midfield, to stop that supply going into the half forwards and the full forward line as well. So it's going to be interesting to see what they come up with.
They're huge as well. Like, look at Dan Morrissey. Look at Declan Hannan, Dermot Burns, Grog Hegarty looks like he's a minor playing under 14. You've Kyle Hayes is huge. You've Aaron Gillan, who's huge. You've Tom Morrissey, who has a chest on him that's, you know, huge, to use that word again. Michael, like, this is a dominating, massive team who have incredible skills. When you see some of the skills, like Keane Lynch is a street hurler. You know, Garrod Hegarty does some crazy things. You know, and then you've got Peter Casey, you have Graham Mulcahy. Like, I mean, they just have too much firepower for teams. They have too much of a system for teams. They had 11 different scorers, scored 26 points from play. This isn't against, no disrespect to Westmead, Laois, teams like, you know, that are Carlow, for example. This is against Clare. This is against the team that should have been in an All-Ireland final and beat the All-Ireland champions Galway 2 years ago.
Yeah, and like, even William O'Donoghue in the middle, like, he's so mangy.
Huge.
Pace they take the ball at, Willie, is phenomenal. Like, that's not even mentioned Dermot Burns or Lachlan and Hannan in the half back line. Like, I always say that Limerick jersey looks tighter than any other jersey, but they're such big men that they really are imposing when you step against them. I can only imagine being on the pitch, because they look so physically dominant when you're watching them on telly. But like, when you mentioned the scorers in that half forward line, like, I couldn't believe when they mentioned that Tony Kelly was 26 yesterday, because he just feels like he's around so long. But Garrod Hegarty's 26, and the difference in pressure in them two men is chalk and cheese for me. Like, if Garrod Hegarty doesn't have a good game for Limerick, and he hasn't had, there's not many games he hasn't played well, but if he hasn't played well, Limerick still go on and win. And then you change that with the pressure on Tony Kelly. It's the complete opposite, because when he doesn't play well, Clare are going to lose.
Yeah.
So Limerick have that thing where they have so many good forwards that, and if any one of them have an off day, the four or five other lads that are going to step up, and you can't man mark all of them. So they've such depth in that panel, it's scary. So
yeah,
they come on, the difference they make, because they're all hungry to get on that pitch, and it must be so difficult to get in that first six of the forward line. So I definitely feel like, when I was watching the game yesterday, I felt for Tony Kelly, because like, the pressure on him at that age is brutal, really, you know.
Yeah, I'll get to Tony Kelly in a second, but that's a fair point there, JJ, in that you see Clare playing Davy Fitzgerald wing forward. He's a defender. You see Dublin playing Chris Crummie in the half forward line. He's a defender because they're big, they're physical, they're a presence there. Limerick have forwards with those qualities. The likes of Garrod Hegarty, who can flick a ball over a fella's head and then do an underhand hand pass inside. Like, we're talking about these monstrous men that other teams are having to convert defenders into. Limerick have these as well. Now, obviously, Kyle Hayes used to be a back, but we call him a forward now.
Yeah, it's look, they have it every way, to be honest with you. If the high ball goes in, they'll win it. If low ball's win, they have the skill and the touch to win the ball themselves. But it looks like when they're going against Limerick, you're probably saying Aaron Gillan and Graham Mulcahy, two big guys. But then you look at us, like Tom Morrissey wouldn't be up there. He'd probably be number five or six if you're going to man marking. But then he comes off with 4 points there yesterday. You know, in a way, just the work rate that he brings to it, but he always tips over on the scoreboard. He kind of comes unnoticed, what Garrod Hegarty and Tom Morrissey do on the wings as well, but it's vital for this Limerick team. But yeah, look, they have it everywhere. If you want to go physically down that route, they'll go with you, no problem at all. If you want to hurl them, they'll try hurl as well. Like, you know, so it's you're kind of scratching your head to see how do I handle these guys.
Well, no, that's it. It's very, very difficult to say. It's very, very difficult solution to try and find. If you're to find a weakness, and it's one of their strengths as well, Mick, is Declan Hannan. He's definitely one of their strengths. He's their captain. But the man doesn't want to mark. And I think Tony Kelly got most of his joy off him because he was floating around. And to be honest, I text Brian Carroll at one point of the game and says, who's marking Tony Kelly? I don't think anybody really knew because he was popping up for scores and nobody was near him. You know, like, I mean, I don't know if that's a weakness of theirs that Declan Hannan just sets back and doesn't really mark.
No, see, like I was thinking about this myself while he's saying, how are they allowing him to do whatever he wants in that fort in their back? But it works for them because they're so confident in the way they play and that they're going to get more scores. It didn't really seem to bother them too much because they're so effective at playing out. Look, they got caught two or three times coming out, but it doesn't affect them whatsoever. It doesn't affect their confidence. They all want it in the back line and they're so confident they're playing it out because they wear down forward lines and the forward lines just cannot keep it up. No forward wants to mark someone all the time coming out with the ball or keep tackling. And they're so dominant at it and relentlessly good at coming out. And every one of their backs have the capability of going by a forward and it opens up out the whole pitch to the back line. And that's what allows them to pick out men up and down the pitch because they're so good at breaking that first tackle and going up through the lines. So, I don't think it bothered him yesterday. Like, Tony Kenny was awesome, but look at the scoreline. They just said, no, we're going to stick to what we do and we're going to beat them. And that's what happened. So, like, at times I was saying, how are they allowing them to do it? But it didn't just affect their game plan. They stuck to what they do. And look, I think that's why Tony Kelly had so much joy yesterday. He wasn't used to getting that much freedom. And I don't think any other team are going to give it to him, especially now. But he hasn't had a dip of form. When you speak of Tony Kelly, it's not a dip of form over the years. It's just he gets so much treatment. But Limerick just didn't seem to bother him yesterday. He just said, look, we'll play our game. And if he scores, he scores. But we're going to win.
Yeah, maybe JJ, they were thrown by seeing him in the forwards. They might have been expecting Willie O'Donoghue to pick him up in midfield. And then when he was started in corner forward, that wasn't part of the, you know, the plan. And they didn't really react to it. And when Tony moved around positions, nobody really followed him. Everybody stayed in their positions.
Yeah, but I agree with what Mike's after saying there. I think that when he did go in corner forward, they weren't going to bring back a man marker just for Tony Kelly either, like, you know. But they would kind of trust the guy that was going to mark him at that particular time. But Tony was moving on. He was corner, he was centre forward, he was wing forward. He was all over the place in fairness to him. But he was kind of, it was a long kind of fight to the Limerick team. But yeah, John Kiley said, okay, Tony Kelly, you do what you want, but we're still, it's a spring confidence in these players that they're going to come over the line and they're going to get the better. Look, after, when you're marking Tony Kelly, he's going to get the better after a couple of minutes anyway. He's going to obviously nick a couple of points here and there. But Limerick lads didn't panic. They were still looking for the ball. They're still playing through their lines. It's stuck to their formation, their style of play. Never deviate from that. And they believe in that because they're after winning so much in the last couple of years by doing that as well. So, yeah, it's a great point for Michael that they didn't care what Tony Kelly did yesterday. It was all about Limerick hurling team and what they were going to do themselves, not worrying about other players. And for a management team and see your players do something like that, it's a great place for that management team to be in.
Yeah. Does that give the team even more confidence, Michael, that they say, right, you know, if we start worrying about Tony Kelly, our system will break down. We're going to perfect this, and it's up to the other team to mess around with their team to try and rattle us.
Yeah, absolutely, Willie. I think, like, if you're in the backs and you're not saying, right, this week you're going to go corner back to mark this man, it doesn't happen in that Limerick team. They have their full back line. They have their half back line. Lads play where they are, and they trust themselves and trust the system, and it works for them. And if you're in that back line, you know you're going to be left half back, and you're not going to have to chase around a fella. You're left half back, and that's your position. And you play the way we want you to play, and we practice and train. And I think, like, if I was a back on that team, I'd love that, because you're not concentrating on who, or next week you're playing Henry Shefflin and the switch wings and the switch positions. They don't. They know where they play, and you also get confident in your position then. You're not moving around. You know how to play your position, and you know how the other lads around you play. And I think it's standing to Limerick, because, look, all the talk could be about Tony Kelly, but they got hammered in the end of the day. And who cares if Tony Kelly scored? He's got, it was phenomenal scoring, but Limerick out-hurled them completely. You know, so apart from one man, Limerick had an awesome display yesterday. So I don't think John Coyley would be any way worried of who they come up against or change any system for any forward.
Yeah, it's an unusual one, really. Like, I mean, I'm thinking, I don't know, just traditionally, JJ, you kind of have a back that you might think might suit that lad, and he follows him for the day. It kind of is going against what we're used to.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Look, it's trusting your players in their positions. They're obviously specialising in their cornerback, specialised fullback, and specialised centre-back. You know, Declan Hannon is not going to go wing-back or anything like that. You never see him playing wing-back. He's always number six, and that's where he plays. And if he's not good enough player, they'll get someone else and go into six then. That's what John Cayley's attitude is, which is refreshing, and it's absolutely brilliant for the Limerick panel to know that, yeah, I'm going for a certain place there. And when I got on the team, it's off to myself. I know exactly how the team plays, and I'll sit in here seamlessly as well. So, yeah, it's a great place for Limerick guys to be in at the moment, you know.
Yeah, we'll talk about Tony Kelly in performance of the weekend. But you'd have to say here, Mick, is the rest of the Clare forwards. Jesus, like, I mean, talking about not playing well. Like, I don't know, like, Donal O'Grady kept talking about Shane O'Donnell and the need to give him more ball. And they probably did need to give him more ball. But I don't know, like, I mean, John Conlon, the context has to be given. John Conlon, Peter Duggan, obviously huge, huge losses. But when, like, Shane O'Donnell, for me, flatters to deceive too often. And then I was saying this yesterday on Twitter, and people say, oh, he needs the right supply of ball. But, like, which of the top players in Ireland need the right type of ball? Like, I mean, usually in hurling, you win your own bloody ball. And, like, I mean, if a game plan has to be built around you getting the perfect ball, well, that's, you know, I don't know if he's good enough for that. Or alternatively, if he can't win his own ball, why isn't he in beside a big man who can win ball for him? Like, you know, Taylor got that goal off a knockdown from Shanahan. I don't know. I've said a lot there. I don't know which point you want to pick up on.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Willie. There has to be other people, like, even to allow Tony Kelly that freedom, there has to be other forwards to step up and put their hand on the play. Like, Dave Reedy gets in and out of ball. He's not solid enough. You don't get it every game in, game out. He steps in and gets a score, but you don't see him enough in games.
No.
Like, there's been a lot of talk of Dermot Ryan. And look, you've seen him work hard and chase him back a number of times yesterday. But he has to be up scoring. Like, you got one great score from the sideline. But if you're capable of doing that, you have to do it over and over again. And he just wasn't getting enough attention from the half-back line. And Limerick half-back line were more of a threat than, much more of a threat than Clare's half-forward line were. So he needs backup there, and he needs players to step up. Shane O'Donnell, look, I think he's a very good hurler, but he's nowhere near the goal threat he used to be. And he seems to get the ball, and by the time he works hard to get it, he's 30 yards out from the goal and very little threat from there. Like, he has to get the ball within the 21 to be any threat to be able to turn and score a goal. So it always seems to me when he gets the ball, he's out in the wing, or his first touch isn't quite right, and he gets the ball and picks it up, and at this stage he's 30, 35 yards out. And he's no threat there, you know, absolutely no threat. So, look, watching Clare yesterday, I don't think they're any way contenders for this year, because I just didn't see enough people that are going to put their hand up or have it in their bag to step up and be consistent scorers. And especially in that forward line, I just can't see where they're going to get scores from. And teams are just going to target Tony, and I think Clare be snookered.
Yeah, no, well, on the evidence of yesterday, obviously, again, we have to say the two lads missing are, like, Jesus, they're their two best forwards. I don't think anyone would argue about that. What do you make of that, JJ, Shane O'Donnell always running to the wing? Is he always running to the wing away from goal because he can't win hard ball in close to goal?
Yeah, it's look, I suppose, first point there as well about Peter Duggan and John Collins. These guys we knew from probably March when Peter Duggan was away, he was travelling anyway. He was definitely gone for the whole year. And John Collins got injured back in March, so they knew they wouldn't have these players for the championship as well. So, like, I know that it's great to have them, but they knew out a long way out that it didn't happen. So they should have come up with a different kind of plan in place now to actually change these players as well. But yeah, look, Shane O'Donnell is probably 100% right. Like he does start to receive before the match. You're kind of saying, "Geez, right, Shane O'Donnell, this he could take off here now. He could score 1-2 or 1-3." But then you look at the scores after the match. He mightn't score, and he has to get a point. You know what I mean? He works very, very hard, but
yeah,
he's going to have to bring a score and back into his game there as well. Like, you know, but another switch I don't think that worked was Dave McNerney there in midfield. I think the game kind of bypassed him above it there as well. And I just think that he'd be better off in either centre back or the half back line, somewhere in the back lines. You can't tell me that the six backs that were playing for Clare were better than Dave McNerney as well. I'd have him back anchoring the defence there again because I thought this game's kind of passing by a small bit. Yeah, he done well in the league, all right, but as I said, the league and the championship is two different things, but it's I just think that he's too good of a player not to be involved in the game, and I think if he's in centre back or full back, he's involved in the game for Clare.
I do definitely take your point that Clare should have realised they were down. Well, Peter Duggan, John Conlon, not so much because he was more recent, if I'm not mistaken. But to be fair, JJ, missing those two is the equivalent of Kilkenny missing TJ Reid and Colin Fennelly. Like, it does throw your plan into complete disarray.
It does, to be fair. Yeah, yeah, I'll take that point aboard. But I think John Dunne did crucial back in March, I think. So, they should have a game plan in place to. Now, maybe they thought they did until yesterday as well, but unfortunately after yesterday we might have to go back to the drawing board a small bit there as well. But Shannon came on and he brought a bit of physicality to it. Now, I don't understand why himself and Aaron Cunningham aren't starting as well. Now maybe again we're not privy to what's going on in training or what situation is regarding a couple of practices the last couple of weeks, but Shannon to me now is a handful and I'd have him on the edge of square, and at least the likes of Shane O'Donnell can work off the breaks that he can break the full back line and break it down, and maybe he can get a couple of scores then, but they're going to have to come up with something and come up with something very, very quickly, to be fair.
Yeah, and maybe Shane O'Donnell needs coaching and be told, here, stay close to goals. I don't want you making those runs because you're running too far from goal. You can't get on the score sheet. Stop making those runs. Stay in beside that big man and work off the breaks, because I do take your points that he no one's questioning his work rate, and he wears his heart in his sleeve, to be fair to him. But I don't know, you probably want a little bit more from him. What's the general take on Dublin then the other night, Michael? Impressed, you know, good performance, maybe not blowing the world away.
Yeah, it's hard to tell, Willie, because I thought Leash were very poor. I thought the movement from Dublin forwards was excellent. I thought it was great to get such a high score, like 231 is great scoring, but again, it's very hard to tell because I thought Leash were quite poor and didn't really have too much of a game plan. Like, if I was Ross King, I'd be going absolutely mental, because if there's at least two, sometimes three people in top of him, and the ball going in was awful. So yeah. I don't really know what Leash's game plan was, but I was happy with the Dublin forward line and Dublin's midfield, which has been struggling in the past. They scored a lot. They were taking their scores very well, and with the addition of Donald Burke there, and I think it's a huge plus for Dublin. So, it was very good, but it was very easy. So it's hard to tell with next week's game coming up, but I hope it stands to them.
Yeah, I'd say we'll definitely stand to them. I agree with Michael there about Leash, JJ. They neither had forwards up the field to help Ross King, nor did they have the space closed down around the middle third. Like, they did neither one nor the other. I would accept Dublin players being loose all over the middle third if you had your forwards up in place and look, this happens, but Leash didn't have any forwards up there. So what? Surely Dublin shouldn't have had as much space as they had.
Yeah, I think the Leash half forward line were poor there on Saturday evening. The Dublin guys had, they were playing a sweeper. Conor Burke was playing sweeper, and they were playing the ball around very, very well, to be fair to them, but they were allowed to do that as well. They were allowed to just kind of get the ball, turn around, look up, and pick the pass there as well. And Chris Crummie, they were feeding Chris Crummie as much as they could there as well, and he was winning, or at least he was breaking the ball up in the forward end there as well. But yeah, at least we very, very, I had to be disappointed with their work rate really more than that. Ross King had a great battle with Paddy Smith. Apart from that then, he's the only one that kind of broke even. Apart from that then, it was very, very hard to see where the pluses were for Willie Dunphy tried hard, but Ebony tried the ball. He'd go right, the ball would bounce left.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those games for. But then look, they're missing a couple of big players from last year as well. Chad O'Wire wasn't there. He threw himself around the place. He's well able to score as well. John Lennon was injured as well. He had a great game last year for a sweeper too. So, and then Leash got a couple of injuries early on in the game as well. So any bit of flow that they were hoping to get just didn't happen for them, you know. And they needed a good start, but I think Dublin were fully aware of Leash's intentions there as well. So they kind of smothered that straight away and pumped a bit of ball down on top of Crummy and Danny Sutcliffe there, and Donald Burke were working very well off the breaks on them as well. So when they got on top there, it was it was inevitable throughout the game that it was going to peter out. But look, Leash came with a run there in the second half, right? They got back to 6 points, but they still left the sweeper back there as well. At that particular point, they've nothing really to lose. 6 points down, you're after in Rollins after getting a couple of lovely long range frees there as well. Why not push the sweeper up and give Ross King a hand up in the full far lane, because they needed a goal at that stage, but they never pushed it up. And obviously, Emma Dillon came on and he got the ball in the end, and that just kind of put the final nail in the coffin.
It seemed like a terrible waste of Picky Marr as well, who looked like he was on song with two good points off. He was out floating around, you know, don't really know where he was meant to be playing. I think you're right, and John Lennon was a huge loss, because Sean Downey was the sweeper, and, you know, while he played the sweeper role, he offered nothing in an attacking threat. And I think the sweeper role has evolved to the point where, yeah, you're doubling up and, yeah, you're intercepting passes, but if you don't offer something breaking out and draw a man, you know, and John Lennon's so good at that, and he sets up that running game and, you know, almost like a hand passing game some of the time we saw last year, Michael, he was a huge loss. And it was only when Paddy Purcell went back as a sweeper that he actually started taking the game to Dublin a little bit.
Yeah, Paddy Purcell got two great scores, and he's so much pace and he can take a score. I seen Downey come out with a ball at one stage and he ran 40 yards straight into Dublin players. Now, in fairness, he looked up during the run and there was zero of capacity. So either, for me, if you're playing that system, you have to take the scores out of the field, because Ross King was surrounded by two or three Dublin lads and there was no point in hitting that ball in there, because it's very rare he's going to do anything with it. So if you're playing that system, you have to have a scorer as the sweeper for me. And Paddy Purcell did that in the second half. Came out, got a great score running up the pitch, and he's so much pace and he's good composure on the ball. But for me, Leash just lacked that game plan. They didn't really know what to do. They ran into cul-de-sacs an awful lot, and I thought they lost their discipline then in the second half. The first 5 minutes of the second half, Leash gave four frees away in their own back line, and they were needless frees because the Dublin player wasn't going anywhere. So they just lost their discipline. I think they were a bit leggy because the forward were moving so well for Dublin. And look, the game, after 54 minutes, they get 6 points in it. Like, you don't give away them four frees. Like, there could only be 2 or 3 points in the game at that stage. So I think Leash lost their discipline in the first 10 minutes of that second half, and it really showed then, and Dublin just took off then at one stage. So, Enda Rowland got two great frees. But for me, Ross King is a great free taker, and he was on, his frees were excellent in Croke Park the other day. Enda Rowland took a free in the 54th minute when there were 6 points in it, from 80 yards. I would have had Ross King out taking that, because that's well within his range of scoring. And he's, for me, the chances of him scoring that are much higher than a goalkeeper. I know Enda Rowland has a great score, great puck, but when you have a great free taker, 80, 85 yards isn't too much to ask. And that would have put 5 points in the game at 55 minutes. So I think that was a little bit of a lapse in concentration for Leash at the time.
Yeah, maybe.
But in Dublin Forest, when the Leash guys were coming out, they weren't running at him and committing to the tackle. They were actually allowing the Leash lads to come up. And then when the Leash lads would get the ball in their hand, then they'd go attack him. Their timing of their tackle was very good. They weren't just running up and committing themselves, and the Leash lad would give him a dummy or a sidestep and they'd gone past him. And then they could actually get their running game going. The Dublin guys, they were they're letting them come. And then the Leash lads would get the ball in their hand. Then they'd attack them and they'd bottle them up. And in fairness, Dublin, they did that very, very well the other night, because I'd say they learned a lot from last year as well, that they weren't going to commit to the tackle and dummy hand pass or a sidestep and they're going past them and they're going out of the game then as well. So they definitely did learn from that last year.
All right, okay. So we have to give Dublin some credit for Leash's running game not working. What did you make, JJ, of Crummy at 11? And what do you make of Davy Keogh and Ronan Hayes? Would you be looking for a bit more of them? We'll obviously talk about Donald Burke in performance of the weekend.
Yeah, Davy Keogh, anytime he got the ball, he turned and went for the goal. That's why he's there, I'd say. He's very, very athletic as well.
He's a live wire, isn't he?
He's live, he's quick, he's strong as well. What he tries to do is get the ball turned and throw his man off so he can actually take on and go off straight for the goal. He was fouled a couple of times. I'd say he was happy enough. They were shouting from the sidelines, David, keep moving, because there were two men from forward, himself and Ronan Hayes was there to win a high ball in there, I'd say.
Yeah.
If the last case scenario, they'd hit the ball in high to him. But he turned himself around the place as well, fair to him. But Chris Crummy, first half, he was right in front of us, right in our line. He was from sideline to sideline, running across. He ran himself into the ground. He was involved in everything good that Dublin did. Now, if he didn't win the ball himself, he was breaking the ball, and he knew what he was doing by breaking the ball down, because he had the likes of Danny and Donald Burke in round place, because the lads didn't actually go up and try and contest the ball a couple of times. They stayed under break. Obviously, they worked on that in training. They knew how good Chris is in the air as well. But at the end of it there, he got a couple of good, nice scores there as well. So
yeah.
I'd say he was very, very happy to kind of ease himself into the game and that centre forward that way. But he'll be a big player for Dublin next weekend. He'll have to hurl like that, but for the 70 minutes next weekend against Kilkenny.
He missed that. He actually started scoring after missing two easy ones, which showed a bit of character, Mick.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Look, he missed an easy one in front of the goal from 30 yards and then caught a great ball and stuck it over the bar. So, look, I definitely keep him there. I think he adds an awful lot to the forward line. But for Davy Keogh, like, for me, it's his work rate. Like, if you're a full back and you have to chase him everywhere and he's so direct, he'll pull you left and right and then he'll run at you all the time. But it allowed, when you brought Trollier in, like, if you see Trollier coming, the speed of Trollier is aiming Dillon is ridiculous. And like, if you're a full back and he came on, like, Trollier scored 1-1 straight. He won a free straight away and then scored 1-1. I think it allowed Trollier to bring him on fresh and as a full back who's tired after chasing Davy Keogh around. I think it's a good game plan.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know Trollier won't be playing from the start, but look how effective he was when he came on. And I think that's what he wants from Davy Keogh. Tire that full back line out, no matter where you are, and then bring in a goal scorer like Eamon or Trollier for the last 15, 20 minutes. I think it will work and it will do damage, because like, you're going to have tired legs back there. I definitely think it was a game plan and paid dividends for Maddie in Dublin yesterday. And if Trollier's coming on and scoring a goal or two, he mightn't be giving out too much that he's not starting then. So
yeah,
I think that was a good idea.
That's a good idea, putting a live wire in there, JJ, to tire a lad out. Now, obviously, in Gaelic football, when Kevin McManaman got so good at coming on, teams used to sub off a player and bring a fresh lad on to follow him on. So now that Mick has left the cat out of the bag, whenever you see him and Dylan coming on next weekend, you'll have to bring on a fresh pair of legs.
Yeah, Cole will be rubbing his hands together now when he tunes into the podcast there. he'll know exactly what to do next weekend. But no, he did. Look, in fairness, Trollier is a natural. Look, if you were to say, who's a natural corner forward, Trollier is definitely a natural corner forward over Davy Keogh, but Davy brings something different, bit of work rate and physicality into it as well. And maybe Trollier, kind of looking at the game Saturday night, said, right, I'm going to have to bring that to my game as well if I'm going to come back on this team as well. So good option for Matty to have there as well. And if you take Ronan Hayes, he's a big man there as well. If the carbon copy of Mark Shute had come on there as well, so you could tell the Ronan Hayes and Davy Keogh to run yourself into the ground, and then you have Mark Shute and Trollier to come on there. They're a carbon copy of the two lads that were on the team already. So, yeah, he's good options, to be fair.
Yeah, they definitely have options. There's no doubt about that. So is Liam Rush only an option as a sub for Chris Crummy now, or is he not an option in the Ronan Hayes role, Mick?
No, he is. He's an option for both. But to be honest with you, like, looking towards next weekend, I'd be looking at him back half-back, because you don't need him in that forward line. Like, Dublin have loads of options forward line, and you've lads hurling well, and like, you've Mark Shute, you've Ronan Hayes, all big lads who can win ball, Trollier. Like, you don't need him there such an
enemy.
I'm worried about that half back line next week against Kilkenny, because Dublin's half back line, they hurled really well against Leash, but they're small. They're all small. Like, Keane O'Callaghan is a corner back playing half back. He's a great marker, but he's not a scorer. He's not a man who's going to go up and catch a ball. Like, Dara Gray, again, man marker, he'll do a job, but he's susceptible to high balls in the air. And then Conor Burke obviously had a smashing game as a sweeper, but again, height wise, he'd be 5'10, 5'11, he wouldn't be reaching 6 foot. And you're going to go against a very good ball winning half forward line against Kilkenny, and I think that half back line could be targeted for high balls against ball winners. So I'd be looking at putting Rushing back centre back and getting a bit of height and a bit of a ball winner back in the half-back line, because we don't need him in the forward line, because Dublin at the moment have loads of forwards, like loads of subs to bring on as forwards, and they're all very good hurlers. So for me, I'd be a bit conscious of that next week in the back line, because you're losing Crummy already, and Sean Moran who was brilliant at being sweeper. He's back, he's in midfield. So that's two very good halfbacks Dublin have lost.
Yeah, would you agree with that, JJ?
Yeah, I would, though, to be fair. Even their full-back in, they attack the ball on Donald Paddy-Smith, but they break the ball a lot back out, and so that's where Kilkenny can target them. If they do win primary position in full forward lane, half forward lane there as well, it's a huge, it'll take a lot of the Dublin game plan away from there as well, because it said Conor Burke picked up a lot of ball as a sweeper there on Saturday night. So if you do win your own prime position against your man, that takes a sweeper out player straight away as well. Like, so the easiest tactic would be to win your home ball for against a sweeper, because he's gone out with, you know. So yeah, I think Kenny will target it right now. And Liam Rush looked at him there the other night. He looked in shape, he looked fit, he looked slim, to be fair, you know. So it could be an option for Matty to move him back. But he was about to come on, and then Leash kind of came back with a purple patch there as well, and he had to wait the 5-10 minutes before he could come on. So Matty, he's obviously in Matty's plans, so it'll be interesting to see what happens next weekend.
Yeah, but in fairness, I suppose, Michael, and what you're saying makes a lot of sense. If he was going to try him at centre back, he would have given him the run the other night in centre back, you know, where he's bringing him on for Crummy.
Yeah, absolutely. Just like when you look at the Dublin, even the subs that come on, they're not big men. Like, they're very good hurlers. They're very good hurlers. But against Kilkenny, Kilkenny forward line are really good ball winners, and they're really good at high ball. And that Dublin back line hasn't been tested. Like, Dublin's full back line, I think, is the best line on the pitch. I don't worry about them too much. Like, they're really good. They've played together. They know what they're doing. But it's quite a new half back line. And against Kilkenny and brilliant ball winners, I'd be worried going into next week just that Kilkenny might target them there, because they are small men. They're really good hurlers, but they're small. And like, look, if you're not starting Rushy in the full forward line, and you might need to be there, he's proven himself. He's a great hand, and he's good at centre back. So like, it wouldn't be something that he'd have to train hard to do. He knows that position. He's played there longer than he's played in the forward. So look, it'd be something for me to look at. Obviously, yeah, he's not. Would have brought him on there, but it'd be something that I'd have in the back of my mind just as a backup plan, because yeah, the subs they bring on aren't really tall men, and they aren't ball winners in the air. So it would definitely be a concern to me, that's all.
No, it definitely would. So performance of the weekend, lads, we're not going to do another slot because we're nearly out of time. Chris Crummy, who we've mentioned, Conor Burke, who we've mentioned, even though, like, I mean, playing as a sweeper, like you're saying, Mick, is a completely different ballgame than maybe playing an orthodox wing back next week. Dermot Burns, he's always good. Cottle Malone, I thought, did well for Clare on Keane Lynch. Garrod Hegarty was outstanding. It comes down between two men, Donal Burke and Tony Kelly, you'd have to say. We'll start with Donal Burke, JJ. And Brendan Cummins said last night on the Sunday game, he was talking about the way he holds the hurl. Can you explain this to me? Because I understand shortening the grip, but was there something else to this?
Yeah, no, you're kind of left-handed hurler, I suppose. Bit look unorthodox, I suppose, especially for a forward, really. But yeah, look, he got on the ball. He started third. Well, he's named 13, but he was out number 11 there, so he had a lot of freedom around Crow Park as well. But what I liked about him was when he got the ball, everyone kind of went back to his own pace. And the match kind of just slowed down to his pace. Never seemed to be in trouble. Didn't look he was going to panic at any situation there whatsoever. And he hit in the freeze very well. But then with the goal, he was 45 yards out when he got the ball in his hand first. But he was bold enough to go for the goal as well. Like, it's very easy just kind of take a sidestep and take your point and go back there again. But yeah, it's a huge plus for Dublin as well coming into it. He wasn't there last year. He looks like an actual forward there as well for Dublin too. So he was brilliant on the freeze to the likes of David Tracy and Paul Ryan, weren't even on the panel. So that's the kind of Matty Kenny could put a lot of faith in him, that he was going to miss, he was going to score every single one of them. So huge plus for Matty, and he'd be delighted with Donal Burke's performance there as well. But Leash didn't lay a glove on him at all, and I think he'll be a marked man come next Saturday night, to be fair.
Oh, you can be sure of that. But for mentioning his goal, JJ, like, I mean, surely that goes down as poor defending from Leash. Like, you have Mullaney, who could have come across. Now, I know he was worried about Crummy, but who are you going to worry about in that situation if you were marking Crummy or Donal Burke? Like, I mean, who's the bigger danger there? And then you have Clear, playing cornerback for Leash, who also could have come across and intercepted him. Like, how unforgivable is that at the highest level, to allow a fella run from almost midfield straight through to score a goal without a glove being put on him?
Yeah, in defence to Ryan, I'd say he just didn't want to make a decision for the forward. What I mean by that is he didn't want to rush at Donal Burke, and Donal would just hand pass it over his head and give it to Chris Crummy. So I'd say he wanted to leave the last minute till he went to go tackle him, but unfortunately Donald was too quick for him. He was gone past the point of no return there for Ryan and Farsley. But yeah, look, but then again, you have to give Donald credit for it. He never panicked. He went straight through and he finished it very, very as well too. I don't think, we could blame the defence, all right, but I'd have to give Donald a lot of credit now. He was bound enough to go for it and he's seen a gap and he went for it, so I'd have to give the forward credit this situation.
From a cornerback, I can't believe it, or a halfback, or the fullback and whatever. But that was one thing Ebro was famous for, JJ, and you've explained it on the show, is that at what point do you stop worrying about your man and you sniff out some danger? Like, I mean, the good players will know. Like, for example, if that was against Kilkenny, you wouldn't even... somebody just watching it wouldn't even notice how good a defending that is because the goal just doesn't come.
Yeah.
It looks routine. It looks routine if you know when to go across and stop that bit of danger.
Yeah, you need trust. You need to, that was a conversation for a game. That's when that needs to be had. So if I go, the cornerback has to come to cover my man. You can't just man mark your own guy because you man mark your own guy. My man didn't score, but we can see the goal. That's no good to the team whatsoever. So if Ryan did have to go, he doesn't have eyes in the back of his head. He needs a shout from the guy behind him, his cornerback, his wing back, come back, cover him for him. Now, maybe he did and he didn't hear him, or else there wasn't anyone there. If there wasn't anyone there, that's where the issues are. So that means that the Laois guys are not defending as a unit, they're defending as individuals. And if you defend as an individual out in Croke Park, you won't survive. You need the 6-on-6 or the 7-on-6 and the way things are going with the sweepers as well. So, again, that's another point. They had a sweeper there as well. So there should have been someone covering that aspect of the defending. But it wasn't there Saturday night, unfortunately, and they paid a huge price for it.
If everybody just worries about their own man, Mick, it only takes a corner back to go past his corner forward and he can run up the whole length of the field and score a goal.
Absolutely. I think Mullally just got caught out with his pace as well.
I think you're right on that. JJ made that point.
Yeah, he was halfway between, and then by the time Burke got to him and he decided to make that tackle, I just think Burke's pace caught him out and he couldn't catch him at that stage. So, look, it's a tough one as a defender. You never want to see someone run from 50 yards and scoring a goal. But, look, both defenders, I think they learn from it that you have to go and meet him at a certain stage before he passes that level where you're not going to catch him. So, but hopefully the two lads learn from it and won't happen again in the future.
Yeah, exactly. So Tony Kelly, lads, there's not much more to say about Tony Kelly. 8 from play, 17 in total and 12 in the first half. Like, I mean, if there's one thing you'd say, the two frees he missed at the start of the second half were actually heartbreaking for Clare. Like, I can't believe I'm putting a dampener on this performance. But it's almost unfair, the level of responsibility he has for Clare now, JJ.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. Like, you're kind of saying, Tony Kelly scored 6, 7, 8 points. You're not even blinking at that anymore. He's such a phenomenal hurler. Like, he's a brilliant, brilliant guy to watch. But he must be looking out in the dressing room after the game. I'm after scoring 8 points from play here now. And
yeah,
like, Limerick had 11 different goals, different scores. Clare only had 5.
Yeah.
And one of them got 17 points. You know what I mean? You're kind of saying, come on, guys, I need a dig out here now. Come on.
Yeah.
I need a hand here. You know, Jesus. But he was absolutely brilliant. When he's on that form, he just unmarkable. Taking into account that he only scored a point in the similar game last year as well. But going from 1 point from play to 8 points from play, it's phenomenal scoring.
Yeah, so that's, like, I mean, you know, if you were another forward on that Clare team, Mick, you'd almost want to go up to Tony and shake his hand and apologise.
Yeah, look, there'd definitely be that feeling if you were a player beside him and he didn't contribute anything. But look, Tony just makes things look easier than anyone else. Like, the pace he comes on to them breaking balls, well, normally you might see them bounce off someone's hurl or leg, or like, they're not easy balls to come on and control. And he makes it look so easy when he's coming full force and picking them up. And look, when he gets the ball in his hand, he's so hard to stop because he's strong, he's dynamic, and he's so accurate. And especially when he gets the ball on the right hand side of the pitch, he loves breaking into the middle. And if he gets that any space at all, he's such a good pair of wrists. He's so hard to hook and block. So, look, he was brilliant yesterday, and I'm delighted for him because he gets a bit of a stick for not performing too often for Clare, but it's just the attention he gets. So he was phenomenal yesterday, and when he's like that, he's just impossible to mark.
Yeah, no, he definitely is. There's no doubt about it. So performance of the weekend, it has to go to Tony Kelly, lads. Donald Burke got 116, 1-4 from play, but that was it. You know, in an easy win, Tony Kelly got 17 points, 8 from play when his team were well beaten. So, like, I mean, I think that's fair enough. And Tony Kelly's picking up about his 10th performance of the weekend award here here on the show. So fair play to him. Listen, lads, we'll leave it there. We'll be back next Thursday. And like JJ mentioned, it's all cranking up next weekend. You have Munster semi-finals and Leinster semi-finals. And we'll see where we go. We'll preview them on Thursday with Cheddar and Brian, I'm sure. And we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, 'cause I won't see you later when we're not allowed to talk it out.